Take me where the promise is.
My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. There are so many things I could say, but he always has so much to say, and about 75% of it is good. So, but I admire our speaker very much. And with that, we have Greg.
This is my first time telling my story at NABA. There's only two things I remember the first time of, and that's my first drink and my first time having sex. And I hope this isn't as bad as them. There's my joke. All right. I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. I qualify for all the AA. February 10th, 2023 is my sobriety date. This is really hard not holding that. My home group is St. John's in Spartanburg, South Carolina. I moved to Atlanta for work, so I attend Tucker Turtle as my home group. I also come to Monday and Tuesday NABA regularly. Let's just go at it. I grew up in Brick, New Jersey. My dad was an alcoholic. I never saw him drink a day in my life. He was sober 20 years before he died. Wow. My family was a pretty good life. I was a terror. I don't like this about my story, but I would hurt other people to feel good about myself. I was a bully and a class clown, and looking back on it, when I did a real deep fourth step, hurt people, and I already didn't feel valued. I already had insecure problems. I was a sports star, and I never believed in myself. I believe I was born an alcoholic. It's just my opinion. So the life was pretty good. The family got a divorce. I ended up, they were pretty cool. My family was cool about the divorce, let us live wherever we wanted. But I was just a terror for everybody I came across my whole life. Liar, cheat, and thief before drugs and alcohol. And then at 13 years old, I had my first drink. It was an OE-40, and I don't remember much. I was a blackout drinker from the rip. I drank 2 40s that night and don't know how I got home. But I will tell you this. If I could, if I can give you an illustration of what it was like for me to drink alcohol, it would be like when Popeye drinks spinach. All of a sudden, I could get the girl. I could beat up Brutus. I could finally be myself. All those nerves, those insecurities that I had, they were gone. And the world was mine. And I lived that way for a while. Due to being somewhat sports star, when I got drunk, I could be a real asshole. I could take other guys' girlfriends. I could fight people. And I built up this crazy persona that was very hard when I did a real fourth step. Very, very hard. I cried a lot, to tell you the truth. We drank on the weekends. That's what we did as kids, 13 on, every Friday and Saturday. We got somebody to buy us alcohol, and that's what we did. eventually dry goods got into my story, and I did a lot of dry goods. There's a lot of drugs in my story as well. So, this is so hard not to grab here. Let's see. My dad died at 16. He had a massive heart attack at my wrestling match and died in the gym. And it crushed my life. I was already off partying, though. It wasn't any real reason, but I will say I went off the deep end. I got into really hard drugs. But the drinking never went away. I was always drinking. I'm the real alcoholic the book talks about. I could build my life up and then tear it down at all different times. At 17, I got my only DWI. I hit a pole going 70 miles an hour the night before my high school football, 7 a.m., right before my football game in the morning on Thanksgiving. And the kid almost died in the car. That did not stop me, but I did run to Florida because that's what I do. I'm a runner. So I dropped out and I moved to Florida and got into drugs and alcohol the first 3 days of being there and come back to New Jersey. Let's see, I don't want to do too many war stories. I come back to New Jersey, man, and my life is just partying. If you do, have you seen Dazed and Confused with Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah.
That's why I like high school girls, because they stay the same age. That was me, man. I was just hanging out with little kids in high school. I was like 23 and hanging out with the 17-year-olds, man. I was just a bum, you know, doing nothing with my life. I had a high school sweetheart, and this is when my life kind of changed. She decided to have an abortion when I was 23, and I couldn't have that, so I ran again. So I went to Florida, and I stayed sober. Well, I shot steroids, but there was no drug or alcohol for 3 months of my life. And I only tell this because it's a pretty big point, in my opinion. I worked out every day, and I ended up going to try out for the Marlins, and because my uncle was professional, so I got an open tryout. And the night before, I've been down there 3 months, and the night before the tryout, I bought something you could smoke, marijuana, whatever. I know it's AI, I apologize. So I ended up smoking that night, smoked in the morning before the tryout, gave it all away. I would not turn my back. I would not do anything different. I could say that today. But it just went off the rails from there. Like I said, I was a runner. I lived in Arizona after Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, back to New Jersey, and then to South Carolina, just tearing up everybody in my path, my family, my friends, my cousins. I lived on couches. Anything, I did not know that I was using these people, but that's what was going on. I was absolutely causing pain to everybody I come across. I stole from everybody in my life, my family, my cousins, like everybody. I would rob them and buy drugs and alcohol. And my brain told me that I was a good person. I could not see anything. I was in a delusion world, and I thought I was cool. I grew up in a world where it was cool to sell drugs, fight, and go to jail. So I lived in that world in my brain for a long time. Okay, so I get back to New Jersey somehow at a detox center, and I got kicked out of one. I do real good when I go to detoxes. I think I heard this in a meeting before. I was always looking for drugs for my whole life. Like, I do good in jail. I've been to jail in 6 states. Everywhere I went to jail. In detoxes, I'm like the number one guy there. Yeah, Greg, he speaks, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So I work myself up, blah, blah, blah. It's all fake, whatever. So anyway, I'm in this detox, and I con them into giving me Subutex. And at the end of this detox, they were like, what are you going to do? And I've already ran away everybody in my life, and I had nowhere to go at this point. So I said, well, I want to go as close to my kids as possible. And they lived in North Carolina, so they shipped me to South Carolina. So I took a bus all the way to South Carolina, not knowing anybody, which was kind of nerve-wracking, but it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. I get kicked out of the first program, and then on February 27th, I get to this place in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I want to track back why I was in this first place, which was called the Salvation Army. I prayed for a woman. I knew a woman would fix me. I knew that. I knew a Christian lady. I knew a Christian lady that did not drink or drug would be the solution for Greg. And I remember specifically praying for this. And when I got to this other program, they got me a job at Adidas. And my boss was a Christian lady. And I ended up dating her. And I moved in her house. And I knew it was going to fix me. I had, I ate with the priest on Wednesdays, Sundays. Everything was great. And then I stole her kid's piggy bank and did more drugs and alcohol. Greg showed up everywhere, no matter what. that was probably the only person I ever loved. I think I loved her. I don't know. I don't know if I had a love yet, but either way, I got baptized while I was with her. I have that tattoo in my arm. That means very special to me that day. But once again, all these little ideas, what I'm really trying to say is all these things that I always said in my brain that were going to fix me were never going to fix me. And I go back out, man. We're talking to homelessness. I lived in, I flushed toilets with water I stole from my neighbor. Just so you know, I had no electric, no water, and I stole water from the neighbor to flush my toilet. I'm just trying to tell you how bad it got. I lived in a shed at McDonald's. I never once thought I was an alcoholic or drug addict. Ever did I think there was an issue. Ever once. I was just going with the flow. Best thing that ever happened to me, my mom finally cut me off. She wouldn't bail me out of jail anymore. So I stayed one time. I think I read the Bible. That was really good for me. All right. We go back to this program, man. This lady didn't save me. I screwed everything up. I robbed her kid, all that good stuff. I did make an amends on that. I come back to this place. It's called Sober Living America. And I get kicked out in probably the first 2 weeks. I get blackout drunk. And they kick me out. And I stay outside for 5 days. I had COVID money. I slept under a semi. Made it to a really bad hotel and smoked a bunch of bad stuff. I don't want to say names. But I came crawling back to SLA. Excuse me. So, the first day there, I come back. I got weed in my pocket. Excuse me. And I'm sitting, and they put me in this house, 802. I remember all this very vivid because it's when my life started to change. I was sitting there, and they have this binder, and one's the curriculum, and one's the guideline, and I'm sitting there, and I'm shaking because when I DT, I have seizures and stuff when I come up with drugs and alcohol, and I just did no detox. I just went back, and I'm really bad off, and I got weed in my pocket, and I'm like, I know I feel better if I smoke it, but I'm looking at this binder, and for whatever reason, gotta be God, I picked up the binder and read it, and it said, read page 86 through 88 in the big book. They had a big book on the table, and I read it. On page 87, it says, I don't know verbatim, but it says, no more selfish prayers. Pray for other people. You can pray for yourself as long as it will help other people, something to that effect. That's the only thing I got out of reading that whole thing, was pray for other people. And that night, I prayed for this guy. I don't want to say his name. His first name is Neil. I won't say his last name. He was from Rhode Island, and I could see his character defects. I could see all your guys' character defects. I could never see mine. And he was from Rhode Island, and I prayed for him because I knew how to fix him. And I went to the 9 o'clock morning meeting the next day, and he talked about what I prayed about. And I was like, well, that's a little weird. What the hell is going on here? Not that I think maybe God is in for my life. I was more like, somebody's reading my brain. What is going on here? This is crazy. This isn't real. And I'm shot out. I'm on a 27-year run now, coming off drugs and alcohol, a lot of hard ones. So I'm losing my mind. And next night, this is probably the most selfish prayer I prayed ever since this day. I just talked to God about missing my daughters. I didn't see him for 2 years at the time. And the next morning, and I'm praying on my knees now for the first time ever. I want that to be clear. I'm actually on my knees. I was the type of guy who was ashamed to pray. I had roommates in programs, so I would never get on my knees. But for some reason, this time was different. And I was talking to God on my knees about missing my kids. And in the morning, I come up, and I come down the steps, and my phone rings, and it's my daughter's mother. I used to say baby mama. I'm better now. And it's my daughter's mother, and she says, Greg, if you stay sober for a little bit, I'm going to bring the girls to see you. And I ran back upstairs and got on my knees, and I haven't missed a night or a morning ever since. This is just the beginning, though. This is the good stuff. So God's entering my life. I did something different, and he's starting to enter, I believe. The next day, there's this trainer for Sober Living America. His name is Jeff Davis. He won't mind if I say his name. He saved my life, in my opinion. He's at our campus, and he's doing training, and we're in a 9 o'clock meeting, and for some reason, we're talking about baptism. And I was baptized on 10/20/19 with that lady that was going to save my life. Well, Jeff so happened to be baptized on the same exact day, and Jeff decided that I would be good for staff. God moment. We both got baptized. He thought I would help out this recovery program if I was on staff, and that's what happened. I had court a few weeks later. These are all God moments for me in the beginning. I had court a few weeks later where, for the first time in my life, when I was praying to God, I was just trying to do everything the book says and everything. I said, I'm okay with whatever you have for me. I got picked up for drunk and disorderly on the road and tried to fight the cop. Well, the cop comes into court that day, and he's standing next to me, and he tells the judge, he was a pleasure. I just had to get him off the road. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on, man? This is crazy. The judge dropped it down to a $25 fine. My friend paid it for me. That drove me, and I walked out of there. I haven't been in trouble with the law ever since. It's crazy. So that was a big moment. On day 15, I become staff. In this program, you have to write a sheet out, and you have to write a sponsor's name on it with his phone number. And that's all he ever was. I call it a paper sponsor. I used to write it down. I had the guy. I asked him. I would never call. On day 29, because my prayers were going so good, I decided, let's pray for some patience. God's got me here. We're good, right? Well, I woke up the next day, and all 47 residents came to me with a problem. And I lost my mind. Everything started swirling in my brain. And for the first time in my life, I called that number on that paper. And we talked for no more than 5 minutes. He said, Greg, you're playing the tape through. I'm really proud of you. When we hung up the phone, the insanity in my brain went away. It all went away. I was at peace again. I was like, holy shit, this works. So I moved forward. I ended up working a second and third step with him, I think 2 weeks later. It's real funny. My second step, when we're sitting there and he's like, do you believe? Are you willing to believe? My brain literally went back to a time when I was on acid at 16 years old. And I remember staring in the sky going, there's got to be something out there. That's literally where my brain went. And I was like, yeah, I believe something's out there. That's all my second step was. We held hands and we said a third step prayer, which was really weird because I didn't know this guy very long. But I was ready to change my life, I guess. I was doing something different. Before we said that prayer, I told them, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know how to turn my will. I don't know how to be a better person. I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. And he said, Greg, will you go home and start your fourth step? And I said, yes. And we read the third step prayer. read the third step prayer. Went home. I don't think I started. I may have started that night. It was very quick. I didn't know where to start. I started with my dad's name and my family, and my list just went on and on out of nowhere. I didn't believe in this stuff. I didn't believe in fear. I didn't believe in all that stuff. And it turned out, I found out a lot of weird shit about me. I went so back deep to that I remember the time losing a race in second grade and crying in front of the whole school because I was the star. And I cried in front of the whole school for losing. Like, it literally, I ended up bringing, God brought me back to some crazy memories. When I was 23, I remember blaming the school for my issues because they let me get away with everything because I was a sports star. So I blamed them. I was like, my life would be better if they would have just held me accountable. There was also one teacher that held me back, I'm not going to say his name, and I hated him. There was one guy that held me accountable. I hated him. I blamed everybody for not helping me. I did not know that I really was living in this craziness the book talks about. I mean, I just literally blamed everybody. There was no win for Greg. the next day after I told my fifth step is when my life changed. I was in apartment 606. I just know it very well. That's why I give you specifics. It's in Spartanburg campus of Sober Living America. I was walking from the kitchen to the living room, and my life flashed before my eyes. I didn't see stuff. My life didn't go like this, but the thought, this is a big moment for Greg. The thought came to my mind that My dad had to die. Everything had to happen in my life for me to be right there at that moment. And for the first time in my life, I didn't want to be somewhere else. This peace came over me. I was as happy as I've ever been. I knew that for me to be here, it all had to happen. God had a plan. And I read this pink cloud for maybe a month, 2 months. Everywhere I went, girls were hitting on me. I would go to all, and man, I was going out to meet my sponsor. Everybody loved me. I came in, I was so down. I hated myself. I couldn't speak like this at this time. I would cry in corners. I was shot out. And all of a sudden, everybody's hitting on me and whatever's going on, and life was good. And I guess I forgot the pain and the misery. And unlike Mary, I didn't drop the rock. And I relapsed. I didn't know how to get out of my own way. That peace that happened that day, though, never left me, and I went back out, and it was horrible, and it only gets worse, and that's real. I will tell you what God did for me, though. In my time using all over these states and finding all the good junkies like I am, these people saw that I got sober, and they would write me on Facebook, "How did you do it, Greg?" So when I'm in the middle of my relapse, God's showing me that I'm actually a beacon of light, or whatever it is, and He's just reeling me back in, man. He wouldn't let go. You know, he leaves the 99 for the one. That's my story. He wouldn't let go of me. And I come back in. I lose a bunch of stuff. People die when I use a lot of pain and misery. It was like another year. And come back into the program. I'm ready to do this again. I get another sponsor. I had to change sponsors because it definitely wasn't my fault I relapsed. I was like, that guy did something wrong, so let's get me a new one here, and which wasn't the case. I still talked to that for a month or two. But I did get another sponsor, and we worked the steps, did my second, fourth, and fifth, moved forward. I made my list of people, and there wasn't a big six and seven for me. I hear some women go crazy on that. That wasn't my experience. I don't know. I make some of my amends. So I call my family, my immediate ones, and of course my family doesn't want no money from me. It's all money, a lot of them, and pain for my mom. My mom says, "Greg, I can finally sleep." And that was it hurt actually. You would think that would be joy, but it hurt me to know that for 39 years my mom couldn't sleep because I was a piece of dookie. I was in a lot of many accidents, 6 cars totaled, helicopters, trains, alligators. This is real. I lived all over. I have a crazy war story. We're not going to get into that, though. It's besides the point. I make a bunch of these amends, and this is no joke. I don't know what happened, but I woke up, and I come out my front door, and I grabbed the person's garbage, the neighbor, right out of their hand. I was like, "I got that." And just took it to the garbage. And then that day, every single person I came across waved at me. Even if they were 100 yards away, they were like. And I'm going, what the fuck is going on again, man? And excuse my language. Some people say it's entering the spirit of the realm, the spirit of the sunshine, whatever you want. I have no idea. I went to the rooms. My home group was like, dude, everybody's waving at me. I was like, I don't know if I've been looking at the ground for 39 years or what, but everybody's waving at me. And they say halfway through the 9th step, some good stuff's going to happen. And that was my experience. I remember driving the 15-passenger van. I just dropped off a bunch of people like me at work. And I was driving down the road listening to Christian music. And I don't know where. This was a spiritual experience for me. The thought came to my mind that I'm helping save the world. One alcoholic at a time. That really came to my mind, I swear to God. And but it was spiritual for me because I was always tearing people down, man, and hurting people around me. So just to do good in the world was real spiritual for me. I did a 10 and 11. We keep that going at all times. I wish to tell you I got it at this moment, but so I'm reading the 12th step with my sponsor, working with others. Two guys come into the rooms. within a week, not the same day, and they're like, we really like the way you share. And it was my opportunity, man. It was my opportunity to sponsor. And I pulled away. Whatever reason, I wasn't ready. I don't know what happened. I got real angry with my sponsor. I had a resentment with him. And I don't know if anybody here has experienced resentment sober, but it's the most pain I've ever felt in my life. It hurts a lot when I can't go put the alcohol or drug in my body so I don't have to think about how mad I am. At this time, I bought a car. I changed my life. I had credit cards. Life was great. Brand new Kia Soul, like the dirt was going down the road. You know what I'm saying? I love that car. I felt really cool in it. The deal is, I started getting back in my kid's life. I was driving in North Carolina. Actually, somebody in AA, before I bought that car, let me take their car on Easter all the way to see my kids in North Carolina. And that just proves the people in here and why they love me and so I love myself, man. Somebody let me take their car to North Carolina and bought me a necklace and said that we'll fight these demons together. And either way, it was great. I was back in my kids' life. And that's all I ever wanted, to be with my two daughters. That's all I've ever wanted. And everything was going well. I got that resentment, and it wasn't going so well. And on a drive to North Carolina, I turned into a liquor store. I do not remember thinking, let's go get a beer. I don't remember thinking anything at all except for, it's there. I never once thought, I'm going to go get a beer or drink or nothing. I just went in, and good old Greg, you know, doing the same shit, driving around drunk with my kids in the car, being a real piece of shit, living on the beach because I had nowhere to go, and I was like, I'm not leaving my kids. I finally made it. I can't think properly when I'm drunk or on substances, and I lasted in North Carolina maybe 3 weeks, you know, in and out of the beach, catch a friend, get their couch. I didn't know many people. I already left North Carolina like 7 years prior. Good old mommy, thank God, loves her little baby, and got me money to get me back to North Carolina, South Carolina. And it didn't end, though, because I wasn't ready. And I went on for another 3 months living at the trap house on the dope man's couch in the same clothes, on his couch every day. They would give me drugs to drive him around, and I would drink all day. She was a 7 o'clock kid. I'm an all-day drinker. And as soon as the store opens, I'm waiting. I'm doing a lot of drugs, and I hate this, but somebody dies again, and this is when it really happened for me, though. For like 2 weeks, she was in the program, too, and she passed away. They found her in the program on her bed, and I was with her, and it hurt a lot. I didn't get her in the dope, but I still did it with her. I don't know what I could do. I was just crying a lot, man. I was on a couch, literally in the same clothes for 2 weeks, nasty as hell. And I'm praying, I'm crying, I'm praying, I'm crying, I'm drinking, I'm drugging, I'm crying, I'm praying for like 2 weeks. And I'm sitting on the couch, and I don't know where it comes from, but all of a sudden my brain's like, dude, you're an alcoholic. You can't drink and drug successfully. You're causing all this pain to yourself. And that was it. I made the phone call to get help. That was on 2/9/2023. Came back into the program. My life has been great. Obviously, I get connected right away. I always know the right thing to do as soon as I get back in the rooms. I never lost what happened in my first round of the steps, though, with God. I'd already built what I needed. I still work the program to the best of my ability, 10 massive meetings, but the relationship was built. I know that he's real. Nobody can change my mind. I'll tell you what life's like now. I've been able to, for my company, move to Indiana, Atlanta, Marietta, and go see AA in other states, and it's so awesome. Because I work in recovery. I'm a director for the program that helped save my life, even though the 12 steps saved my life. I've been able to see the world. My sister OD'd and died 2 years ago, and She was 2 years sober. We had a lot of good recovery talks, and I knew that she found God. So I was able to go to the thing where everybody was a drunken mess and give the eulogy and stay sober and let them know that she's happy and she's at peace. My family can't really get over it. They still drink and cry over it. Not that this is cool or anything, but I haven't had to shed a tear because I know that she's happy and she's out of pain. We believed our same beliefs on the same higher power, which we call God and Jesus, whatever. So I know my sister's happy, and it hasn't had to be painful for me. I've been able to be the light for my family during this time, and I make no money at what I do. Zero money. But I got a little peace and a little bit of serenity would help another alcoholic. I still have more money in my bank than when I had a $1,000 a week job. So I've learned how to manage my money a little bit. I don't buy Red Bulls every time I stop at the store. I don't do these little things that the stupidness. So the manageability is coming back in my life. I'm able to save. I have an actual savings account with money in it, not just like a penny. You ever heard on that one? I've been there. Savings account, I get a penny, I take it out, I put it back, I take it out, blah, blah, blah. Next month, I'm going to wake up on Christmas with my daughters for the very first time. It's crazy. Their mother just got a DWI and crashed her car, and she can barely move. She's okay, though, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to help out, and I'm going to wake up with my kids. My oldest is 12. That's when my recovery started. In my brain, I wanted to get better 12 years ago, and it took me, I'm coming up on, 22 months right now. It took 12 years, though, because I just wouldn't listen to the suggestions. Just because I wanted to listen to what people say. Not that this matters, but I haven't had sex in 2 years. I am the happiest person I've ever been. I want you to know that. I haven't been with a woman spiritually, mentally, or physically, and I have not that I never want to be, but I am so happy that I don't even want to mess it. I heard somebody suggest one time, don't date, and it wasn't even my sponsor, and I did it anyway. And, I'm very happy, you know what I mean? I'm sure the time will be right, and everything will be good at that point. But right now I got two daughters, and that's enough women for me in my life, and my mom, obviously. I have a best friend named Clement. The reason why that is important is because I didn't know how to be a friend, and I couldn't have friends. I had buddies like Eddie Thatcher with Bill, running buddies, you know what I mean? I had running buddies, and never one of them came to me and said they found God. I wasn't that lucky, but it's so cool to have a friend and to be a part of their life. It's cool to be a son. I talk to my mom a lot. It's cool to be a father, a friend, a brother. My sister and me talk. She's actually starting to want to sober up too. My other sister, she's walking and stuff. That's what we do, man, when we get sober, right? Other people see it and they want to. And her life's not unmanageable, but she just sees my happiness. And when she talks to me, my family asks me for advice. It is so cool. This is crazy. They call me and they want to know what I think about situations. And I'm like, okay, well, this is what God would do. And usually pretty good advice. So, The 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous changed my life forever. It's given me everything my heart desired. It still does to this day. There's things maybe that one day that'll be in my life, but for right now, it's given me everything my heart desires. Absolutely every single thing my heart desires. I have no wants. I shop at Goodwill, and I'm cool with that, bro. I used to have to buy, like, Nike and stuff. I'm like, boom. My materialistic well-being can never precede my spiritual growth. It's on page 127 of the big book, and that's talking about something different than what I use it as, but I always chased everything in my life except for my spiritual growth. I chased women, I chased shoes, clothes, cars, every single thing except for God or helping other people. And today I don't live that way. Today I put other people before me. I literally put other people before me, and it's the best feeling in the world not to be as self-centered as I was. That's all I got. Thank you.
bell-bottom buddy. The nicest director out there. Thank you.
We have a wait shift for those of you who have maybe gone back out. It's taken you 12 years to get in. You want to start over? May I take a few speedboats myself? So. Wait shift, anybody? Sober for 30 days. Got a camp walk. More for 30. How about 60? And I know this is a year, and this is an honor for me to give this out. Birthday, 5 years.
Look into love.
for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Take me where the